This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Manuel Noriega trial, which began today, is expected to be the most sensitive and complex drug trial in U.S. history. The former Panamanian dictator is accused of accepting millions of dollars in payoffs from the Medellin drug cartel in exchange for letting the cartel use Panama as a way station for drug shipments to the U.S. and offering a safe haven for drug dealers. Noriega has also been indicted for laundering money through the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, the BCCI. Noriega was an important client in this bank, whose client list included dictators, drug smugglers, money launderers, and arms merchants from around the world. There was a new development in the BCCI story today. Federal prosecutors announced indictments against six former bank officials and a reputed cocaine kingpin. They're charged with using the BCCI to launder drug profits, including money given to Noriega. My guest Douglas Franz has been covering the Noriega case for the Los Angeles Times. He's also completing a book on the BCCI scandal. We invited him to discuss what's at stake in the Noriega trial and to explain the Noriega-BCCI connection. I asked Franz to lay out the government's case against Noriega.
From the start, the government has tried to portray this as just another dope case. There was an incident when Leon Kellner, who was the United States attorney in Miami, came up to Washington to get a final approval for the indictments. This was in February of 1988, and he went over to the National Security Council for a meeting while he was here. And one of the officials there challenged him and said, "Since when does a United States attorney in Florida make foreign policy?" And Kellner said, "I don't make foreign policy. I indict dope dealers." And that's the way the prosecution is trying to portray this case. They're going to parade a long list of sleazy witnesses, people who have dealt in drugs, people who have been money launderers, convicted bankers from the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, and they're all going to tell bad stories about Manuel Noriega. In exchange, the government has given away the keys to the courthouse in some cases. One of the principal Noriega witnesses against Noriega will be a guy named Colonel Luis del Cid, who was Noriega's right-hand man and who also allegedly served as a bagman conveying cash payments to him from various money launderers. Del Cid was originally indicted with Noriega, and he exchanged his cooperation for a three-year sentence, a recommendation of a three-year sentence, which is really a pretty light term given the gravity of the original charges against him. He's just typical of the sorts of witnesses. In fact, he may be one of the cleaner witnesses. We're going to have maybe as many as 50 witnesses come up there and testify about Manuel Noriega's drug dealings and his dealings with the Medellin cartel.
Okay, so the government is trying to treat this as just a really big drug case. The prosecution, on the other hand, is saying that they're going to put the U.S. government on trial. What kind of charges are they going to be making about the U.S. government and its relationship to Noriega?
Lord only knows how broad and how deep these charges are going to be. There have been rumors about all sorts of potential embarrassments for the Central Intelligence Agency, for George Bush, for a whole host of American drug enforcement officials. And these rumors are we're finally going to find out how much truth is behind these rumors during the defense case. It's going to be a month, maybe 2 months, probably closer to 2 months before we get into the defense case. But the defense, you were right, they have to embarrass the United States government. But more than that, they have to raise doubts with the jurors about the case that the government will have just given them. They have to make those jurors think, we're not getting the whole truth here. The United States government was involved in some way with Manuel Noriega. They either winked at what he was doing or they were complicit in what he was doing. That's the defense's task here. It's one of their tasks. And to do that, they're going to trot out perhaps as much as 1,600 pages of classified documents that the defense has received under special security arrangements. And those documents are going to talk about a whole range of American-sponsored activities that Manuel Noriega performed for more than 20 years. He had meetings we know of with George Bush in 1976 when Bush was head of the CIA, and again in 1983 when Bush was vice president. Noriega ran guns for Ollie North to the Contras. We know that now. We know that as far back as 1978 and 79, when the Panama Treaty negotiations were going on, Noriega was an informant for the Carter administration, providing them with information about the positions that the Panamanian government was going to be taking in those negotiations. We know that he spied on Castro and provided information to the CIA about Fidel Castro and Cuban intelligence activities. You know, at the same time, Noriega was selling information to Castro about U.S. activities. I mean, Noriega was really a general for rent, and he was for rent to people from all sides and all walks of life, from the drug cartels, from the intelligence agencies, from the Cubans, from the DEA. Just a whole host of people paid money to him and were willing to take what he gave them.
I think that Noriega's defense is going to charge that the CIA, with Noriega's permission, was able to use Panama as a place to route arms for the Contras, and in return, the CIA basically turned its back while Noriega worked with the Medellin cartel. Is that right? Is that one of the charges they're going to make? And if so, what kind of evidence do you think they're going to have to back that up with?
That's the key question, is how much evidence they have. The documents, I mean, I've seen enough declassified documents to know that these documents probably are not going to contain a smoking gun. There's going to have to be a witness or a series of witnesses for the defense who can explain what these documents mean, who can say, we knew what Noriega was doing. We permitted him to do that in exchange, as you say, for helping the Contras. We knew that he was working with the Medellin cartel. Or perhaps a different defense tactic may be to say the DEA knew that Noriega was working with the Medellin cartel because they paid him to do so. They asked him to do so, and he was providing them with intelligence information on the cartel. I think one of the main defense strategies is going to be to say that Noriega was essentially a double agent, that he was working for, while he pretended to the cartel to be helping them, he was actually working for the DEA to gather intelligence and to gather other information. And there certainly are documents that have already come out that give some credence to that theory. I know there's going to be a letter from Jack Lawn, who was the Drug Enforcement Administration administrator in 1987, to Noriega, praising him for cooperation in what up to that point was the biggest DEA drug seizure and undercover operation in history, an operation called Operation Pi. And in there, the praise was effusive for Noriega. There are lots of letters like that from Jack Lawn, from William Webster when he was head of the CIA, and from a whole host of American officials. And those are going to raise, the defense is going to try to raise doubts in the juror's mind. If they can't prove that Noriega was assisting the United States government actively, can they at least raise doubts? That's the question that the defense is going to have to answer.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Douglas Franz, and he's been covering the Noriega case for the Los Angeles Times. He's also completing a book about the BCCI. Is the defense strategy here in a way that if they can't prove that Noriega is innocent of the charges, they could at least try to bring members of the U.S. government down with him?
Well, I think that's right, Terry. I mean, I think that Noriega has about as much chance of an acquittal in this case as he did of fighting off the invasion of December 20th, 1989. The forces arrayed against him are almost insurmountable. You're going to have this long, long list of government witnesses. The government has been working on this case for 20 months. They've gotten tons of documents out of Panama since we invaded Panama in late 1989. And against those odds, you know, Noriega has his own recollection. He has classified documents that he's been able to get, and he has this kind of goofball defense team, which seems to be all over the place. It's going to be a very difficult battle for him. But he's been an underdog. He's a very shrewd man. He didn't survive and come to power in Panama without being very cunning and very intelligent. And he's going to mount a strong defense. In the end, I suspect what you've said is what's going to happen. He'll embarrass the United States government. But I think that he's going to be convicted, and how strong that embarrassment will be the big surprise of this trial. There were long discussions in the Central Intelligence Agency and within the Justice Department leading up to this trial about whether the U.S. government and the Bush administration can stand the heat. Clearly, the decision was that they can. They could have cut some deal with Noriega. It would have been politically unpopular. It would have allowed them, you know, possibly to avoid the embarrassments. They've decided that the political heat certainly outweighed the potential embarrassments, and so we're going to get a look in the next few months at just how embarrassing this will be and what sort of new passages will be written about very important things that have happened in the United States in the last few years, particularly Iran-Contra. I think there's going to be a lot of new information about Oliver North and about what we were sending to the Contras.
What questions do you think might be raised at this trial about the United States' motives in invading Panama?
Well, I don't know how much Judge Hoover is going to allow in about that issue. I mean, clearly, while Leon Kellner said in before this indictment a few days, I indict drug dealers, I indict dopers, this is not a foreign policy case, it's become a foreign policy case. It's no longer just a drug case. Since we invaded Panama, it became a major foreign policy issue. We went in there to remove Manuel Noriega because he was a political thorn in our side, not because he was a dope dealer. In fact, a recent GAO report would seem to prove that theory by pointing out that the flow of drugs through Panama since Noriega was removed has actually increased. So foreign policy issues are going to be important. I'm not sure Judge Hoover has been very strict so far in what he's allowed the defense to bring up in pretrial hearings. I suspect he's going to be very strict here. He's not going to allow them willy-nilly to put the U.S. government on policy and to make this a forum on U.S. foreign policy. But it's going to creep in. There's just no question about that.
Now, Noriega said that when he was brought to the United States, he mistakenly believed that he would be able to have a fair trial, that he also believed he'd be able to use his money to hire the lawyers of his choice. He says, it's painfully obvious that the United States government does not wish me to be able to defend myself and has done everything possible to deprive me of a fair trial and due process. They've taken my money, deprived me of my lawyers, videotaped me in my cell, wiretapped my telephone calls with my lawyers, and even given them to the press. From what you've seen, has the United States treated Noriega unconstitutionally?
Well, I'm not a constitutional expert. He's certainly been treated uniquely. There's no question about that. Whether that rises to a violation of whatever constitutional rights he may have is a difficult question. Since he's been arrested, I would say that pre-arrest, before he was taken into custody, I think you could raise a lot stronger constitutional questions about the legality of invading Panama to bring this man to trial. I mean, what you have to do when you think about that is use a little common sense and reverse it and say, how would we feel if, say, Iranian military commandos had come into the United States and captured the commander of the USS Stark after he mistakenly shot a civilian airplane out of the air? You know, how would we feel? You know, you can make some parallels here, I think. Since his arrest, since he was put into custody, I think a lot of this has been smoke on the part of Noriega and the defense team. I mean, for instance, the fact that his telephone calls were taped. Anybody who's ever been in a federal prison or a Metropolitan Correctional Center, which are the temporary holding cells, will see by the payphones a notice pasted there that says your telephone calls are going to be monitored. I don't really have any problems with the fact that his conversations were taped. He had to know that was going to happen, and he wasn't using those. The only calls that aren't supposed to be taped are the ones between you and your lawyer. Those are privileged. But what he was doing was calling his lawyers and then being transferred all over the world, and there's plenty of evidence on those tapes that he was talking to his mistress' wife, his own wife. He made a call to the Cuban embassy in Panama, and he was doing a lot of things that are proscribed once you're into a federal prison.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Noriega trial, which began today. My guest is Douglas Franz, who's been covering the case for the Los Angeles Times. He's also completing a book on the BCCI. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Noriega trial with Douglas Franz, who's covering the story for the Los Angeles Times. One of the principal witnesses against Noriega is going to be his personal banker from the BCCI. Now, you're writing a book on the BCCI.
Yes.
So tell us first about who this witness is and what the connection is.
Amjad Awan became Manuel Noriega's personal banker in 1982, shortly after the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, or as it's now known in some circles, the Bank of Crooks and Criminals International, opened its offices in Panama. Amjad Awan was a young Pakistani executive in this worldwide bank, and he was sent there specifically to court Manuel Noriega. And Noriega came in a few weeks later after some of this courting and opened up a secret account. It was a manager's ledger account, open only to Amjad Awan's eyes, and he opened that up with an initial deposit of $200,000 in cash. Over the years, the balance in that account rose to $20 million or more, and Noriega and his family used it as a personal slush fund, and Amjad Awan administered it on behalf of them as a slush fund. He paid out cash to Noriega, he paid for limousines, he paid for hotel rooms at the Helmsley Palace in New York. Some of those bills were $4,000 or $5,000 a day for big suites of room and all kinds of room service and limousines. And this all was money that came supposedly from the drug payoffs, from the Central Intelligence Agency, from the Defense Intelligence Agency, from who knows where else Manuel Noriega supposedly got this money. But the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, and particularly Amjad Awan, are going to play a very interesting and important role in this case. In a way, you see two big scandals combining here in this Miami courtroom. You've got the long-running case here against Manuel Noriega, and then we're going to get another look inside the dealings that Manuel Noriega had with the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, and we'll get a real good look at how that bank, I think, courted dictators around the world and what they were willing to do for these people. For instance, after Manuel Noriega was indicted in 1988 by the U.S. authorities, Amjad Awan helped him move $23 million through those BCCI accounts into other accounts in an attempt to get them outside the reach of U.S. authorities, and after he was deposed, to keep them outside the reach of Panamanian authorities.
So in other words, Amjad Awan helped Noriega launder his money.
Helped him, yeah, absolutely. That is a definition of money laundering, no question about it.
So what would the BCCI get in return for laundering Noriega's money, besides getting Noriega's account? Was there more that Noriega had to do for BCCI?
Oh, sure. Manuel Noriega was a good customer for BCCI in the sense that he passed around the word that they were good guys. He recommended a number of his other business associates and allegedly a number of money launderers that to use BCCI in Panama also. One of these money launderers is a guy named Stephen Kalish, who was convicted of laundering millions and millions of dollars in marijuana profits. And I'm not sure, and I don't think the prosecution has decided whether Kalish is going to testify in this trial or not, but Kalish has testified in previous settings and before a Senate subcommittee that Manuel Noriega had recommended that he use the BCCI branch in Panama, and that he went in there with a suitcase full of cash, and that Amjad Awan himself, on Noriega's recommendation, helped him open up an account, and that Kalish was just one of many money launderers and other assorted and nefarious characters who ran their illegal money through the Bank of Credit and Commerce in Panama. This is sort of a microcosm of what the Bank of Credit and Commerce was doing all over the world. And what the Bank of Credit and Commerce got out of that was a chunk of the money. They would take big fees. They would take a 1% fee off of all cash that came into the bank. And they also then were all able to pump these cash deposits into their worldwide system and essentially use this cash to keep their Ponzi scheme running. And my perception of the Bank of Credit and Commerce is that it was a giant 19-year Ponzi scheme.
What are you hoping to learn from this trial? What kind of information are you hoping will come out of it?
I think that the most interesting phase of this trial is going to be the defense end of it. We know what the prosecution is going to say. They're going to have witness after witness saying that they delivered cash to Manuel Noriega on behalf of the Medellin cartel, that they paid Noriega millions of dollars to protect the leaders of the cartel when they were on the lam from Colombia after assassinating a justice minister. We know what's going to happen there. We don't know. I don't think we've got much of a clue how strong the defense is going to be. The government, in a case like this, has to show its hand. Prosecutors have to tell what they're going to do, what they hope to prove. The defense is like an iceberg, and we've only seen the tip. If this were a really crack defense team, I would expect one hell of a battle down there in Miami. Because of the questions that I have, based on the past 20 months or so of exposure to these defense lawyers, I have some questions about how effective they're going to be. But nonetheless, I think we're in for quite a show down there, and there are going to be a lot of new chapters written about some really interesting parts of American foreign policy in the last decade.
So you don't have a lot of faith in the defense lawyers. What makes you question their ability?
Well, because the way to build a case like this is not just on the classified documents. As near as I've been able to tell from the motions they've filed and from the other defense lawyers I've talked to down there and talked to with my partner on the Noriega case, Bob Jackson at the LA Times, there is a sense that they haven't done anything except get these classified documents, that they hope to use these basically as their whole case. Now, clearly, they had to do a lot more. They had to line up a lot of retired spooks, people who could come in there and testify about Manuel Noriega's relations with their agencies while they were there. They have to have people who can explain these documents, and so far there's been no indication at all that they have lined up any of the right people, and they didn't line them up early and get their statements on the record so they couldn't be changed to fit somebody else's theory or somebody else's take on the facts in this case.
Are you going to be heading down to Florida to watch the case?
Bob Jackson, my partner at the LA Times, is going to take the first part of it, and then I'll go down later. I'll go down when it starts to get cold here in Washington, I think.
Okay. Douglas Franz, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Douglas Franz has been covering the Noriega case for the Los Angeles Times. He's also completing a book on the BCCI. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.